Good morning. This is Audrey Niffenegger, author of The Time Traveler's Wife, and you are listening to Sandwiches at Irregular Hours. I'll see you in the future.
Too much scrolling for May 17th, 2022. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm shirtless Chip Hessenfla, ready to do some dancing, Steve.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. If you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. You doing some dancing this morning, Chip?
Doing some dancing, Steve. All right, there's one spot
Dancing Steve is a whole other thing.
That's right. Well, I mean, there's one spot left, Steve, and it's going to be me and Patrick Swayze. We're going to see who's going to make it.
Oh, Patrick Swayze didn't make it. Sorry to break it to you, Chip.
That means I'm going to win by default. I'm super excited.
Default!
I guess you mean Chris Farley didn't make it either, Steve.
Oh, too soon?
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. Hey, Chip, did you make it to the movie theater to watch anything this week?
I did not make it to a movie theater, Steve, but I did watch things.
Yeah, I saw quite a bit. I re-upped my Netflix. You'll maybe figure that out by my list of movies that I watched this week. The first thing I watched was The Pentaveret. This is a 6-episode, 30 minutes apiece, 3-hour total romp with Mike Myers.
Madness of Mike Myers or a more reserved Mike Myers, Steve?
Beyond madness. This is the Mike Myers that The Gong Show didn't go very well. So he said, you know what? I need to up my madness. And he's playing 7 different characters in this one. And really what it's a study in is how to edit. The editing on this is fantastic. There are multiple moments in this where Mike Myers is interacting with himself in 2 or 3 or 4 different iterations at the same time. And the editing to see a hand contacting a person and the audience thinking that's the same person is stunning.
So do you think this was a fairly inexpensive show to make?
No, this was a very expensive, very, very expensive show. Star-studded. There's so many people in this. I don't want to give away any of the jokes, but there's a Key and Peele joke in here that is fourth wall breaking and hilarious. There is Ken Jeong. Oh my God. I don't know how he gets work at this point. I don't know how they kept him on set because his character was super annoying. And my idea of Ken as an actor is probably not far off from the characters that he plays.
Really? So The Hangover is a real person there?
Because he plays that character over and over and over again, I have to imagine that that's what he's like at a party. And boy, I would just be backing away slowly from Ken Jeong.
Well, all right. So do we recommend people watch this?
Oh, that's a hard question, Chip. This is wholly inappropriate at times. There is a lot of male nudity in this and a lot of really audacious comedy. There's also an overwhelming political message about gullible people and leadership and especially how Americans and Canadians are very different. So we see here a Illuminati style leadership that is running everything and the comedy of how that leadership leads to ideas that might be false is the conceit of this series. If you love Mike Myers, if you love when he's really being wacky, you'll probably enjoy this, but it's a 3-hour hit you over the head with comedy kind of experience.
All right. But Steve, that's not the only thing you saw on Netflix.
Right. I also saw a very, very British, very dialogue-driven story called Operation Mincemeat. This might sound familiar to some of you because Brian Brushwood told us this story on the World's Greatest Con last year. This is the dramatic, very dramatic, very British story of a World War II intelligence service where they decided to trick Hitler into thinking that troops were going to Greece while they were actually going to Sicily.
And did it work out?
It did. Spoilers, World War II ended well.
Oh, well, good, good. Well, let's,
the story here. Spoilers. The story here is that they planted papers on a corpse and floated that corpse to Spain in hopes that the spy network in Spain would get those papers to the desk of Hitler in Germany. This is, again, very British. All of the British actors are in it. Colin Firth and Mark Gatiss are two of them, along with Jason Isaacs and Penelope Wilton. You know, Harriet Jones, we know who you are.
All right, Steve, do you recommend this?
I recommend this to those of you who are history buffs that would like to see the idea of spies in World War II. One of the more interesting parts of it is the fact that Ian Fleming was one of the characters in this story. He was an intelligence officer working for the Brits in World War II. And in this portrayal, he's writing those stories that become the spy thrillers of the James Bond series.
Well, he could be 007, Steve. You never know. You never know.
It's intriguing. I would recommend it for the history people, for sure.
All right, Steve, you actually went to the theater. I reviewed Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness last week. Tell me what you think, Steve.
I finally got to see this movie. I finally went to the theater and saw it. It is Evil Dead Part 4. Sam Raimi somehow convinced Disney to make a very high budget Evil Dead film. I don't suggest this movie to anybody who doesn't love Sam Raimi movies. It is a horror movie wrapped in the Trojan horse of a Disney film. I love this to no end. I will see it again before long.
Well, so this is a Marvel movie. So I mean, it certainly fit into the Marvel universe.
Does it? Universe, yes. But genre of Marvel superheroes, I don't know. I think that this is more horror than most of the Marvel film goers are expecting.
Well, is it horror? I mean, is it scary?
Yes, I believe that this is a horror film, a comedy horror film, just like The Army of Darkness, just like all of those fun movies that Sam Raimi have given us from that genre.
And what did you think of the little teaser at the end?
The teaser didn't affect me. I don't actually know who that character is that was teased at the end, but the comedic ending, that last Sam Raimi moment with Bruce Campbell, I was smiling for an hour afterwards. Spoilers to anybody who hasn't seen that movie, but yes, it brought me joy.
All right. I enjoyed this film and you did too.
Mm-hmm. I suggest it to anybody that loves that genre, not to anybody who is going for a superhero adventure.
Well, people go to because they are part of the multi-episodic nature of the Marvel universe. Most people are not skipping around. They're just going to the latest one.
Okay. I see that. I understand that. I would not recommend, if you don't like horror movies, my family does not like horror movies. They did not like this movie.
Oh, interesting. All right, Steve, did you boldly go where no man has gone before?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Did you boldly go where no person has gone before, Steve?
Yeah, there is a new Star Trek series on Paramount Plus called Strange New Worlds. This is a prequel to the original Star Trek series. This is Captain Christopher Pike, who we met in Star Trek Discovery, getting to be the head of the Enterprise with Spock and Uhura and having some great new old adventures.
How wonderful. Did you like this?
I like this very much. It's very different from anything Star Trek has done before. The writers are no longer relying on Gene Roddenberry's metaphor for politics in America, and they're going straight to an explanation of the American political divide. And they included footage from January 6th, 2021 in this story about how we need to work together to get along.
Okay. Is this a multi-episode type of, is it a season? Is it like six episodes or?
Yeah, this is a full series. I believe it is 10 episodes in full. We have seen two episodes so far of Star Trek New Worlds, and I'm enjoying it very much.
Steve, Rebel Wilson has always been a fan favorite. Is there anything that you saw that possibly had her starring in it?
We talked about it last week. There's a new movie called Senior Year on Netflix. This is the idea of a cheerleader who's been in a coma for 20 years, waking up and wanting to get back to her life. She was 17. She fell and went into a coma. 20 years later, she wakes up and wants to get back to high school to complete her senior year. And yes, Rebel Wilson is that cheerleader.
And she adopted an Australian accent, Steve.
Well, the storyline does explain that slightly. Her mother in the story is Australian, and she and her mother moved to the United States early in Rebel's life, but late enough that she kept her accent. But the accent is just fine. It's fine. Everybody else is American, and she's Rebel Wilson.
And it sounds like a long walkabout, Steve.
It could have been such a better walkabout, Chip. It could have been so much more of a message about what are we doing in high school in 2022? Who are we as teachers and as students? It's a very uneven, muddied message about popularity and the idea of the smartphone affecting students and teachers. It could have been such a better view of who we are in 2022 from the perspective of a person out of time from 20 years ago. Just an easy, be kind to each other. Understand each other. Understand that everybody has a story and you can't judge someone else's motives. There's so much misunderstanding in this silly comedy, as you might expect, but it's so uneven. They're trying to give those nice messages, but at the same time, talking about popularity contests.
So in 16 Candles, Jake showed up at the end. Steve, does Jake show up at the end?
There is a happy ending for Rebel Wilson's character, for sure. And
everyone loves a happy ending, Steve.
There is definitely that. Finding joy in other people's joy is kind of the message. And finding the people who you care for and who care for you is important. It's an interesting twist because the two main characters other than Rebel Wilson become the teachers at the school 20 years on. And it's a good attempt. I would not recommend Senior Year, however.
Excellent.
You got a chance to finish up Winning Time, The Rise of the Lakers Dynasty.
I did, Steve. And this was certainly a trip through the late 70s, early 80s. This is about the Los Angeles Lakers, about when Magic Johnson gets drafted, and about how Dr. Buss bought the franchise and turned basically the Los Angeles Lakers into the NBA's version of the Dallas Cowboys. Basically, just brought the NBA into the modern age. Basically, ultimately set the stage for what Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls would ultimately do. And I really, really enjoyed this. I do know that there's been a lot of press where Jerry West, Magic Johnson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, many of the people portrayed in this film series say, hey, listen, this is not what happened. But you have to recognize this is also a entertainment show. So this is not history. It's history-ish. But it is, the grand story is the rise of the NBA and the rise of the LA Lakers and the competition they had with the Boston Celtics. I love this series. This was really a good sort of adult series. It's certainly on the backdrop of Hollywood. There's a lot to enjoy with this. And there's no doubt the actors that played Magic Johnson and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar just seem to really portray the real characters very, very well. At the end of every episode, Rick Fox, which was a LA Laker player at one time, also played for the University of North Carolina, super GQ guy. Rick Fox at one time was married to Vanessa Williams. Two of the GQ people of the world having children. I'm sure those children are, they're probably in their 20s now, probably as GQ as their mom and dad were. Certainly the super good looking people. But anyway, it is a very good, once again, adult situation type of story. You can watch it on HBO.
Okay. And you also were watching a documentary about Dungeons and Dragons to level out your sports and your nerdery, The Eye of the Beholder, The Art of Dungeons and Dragons.
I tell you, every once in a while, I run across a movie that I haven't seen. And this is about the art of the Dungeons and Dragons. This is about Gary Gygax, the development of the series, about interviews about many of the creators that made this game and the artwork that made it come alive. It went from the beginning artwork, which we learned is just a bunch of kids basically drawing stuff, to when they really went in and they hired like professional painters. And many people have this idea of what fantasy art would be. That fantasy art was basically reflected in today's society based on this Dungeons and Dragons artwork. I enjoyed this. I'm not sure everyone will do so, but certainly it's interesting because we have this little piece of history that mm-hmm. takes place right across the border in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and certainly has this massive impact. I mean, Steve, at the end of the month, we've got Stranger Things 4 coming out.
And that would not exist without Dungeons and Dragons. That whole legion of people that love playing these role-playing games, having their dice on their desk right now in front of me. There's a whole reason for all of the art that came after. And Eye of the Beholder is a great, interesting way to look at it. Opening this week, we've got some interesting movies. We've got Downton Abbey, A New Era, coming to theaters this week.
Steve, they're going to film a film.
This is the sequel. This is the second movie.
The story is to film a film. Because what would a bunch of British actors want to do, Steve? They want to have a movie about filming a film. Wow. This is going to be a stretch, Steve.
If the Oscars taught me anything, it is that they give awards to movies about making movies. So this is a shoo-in.
Oh, right. Steve, it's going to be at the theater if you have to go to the theater.
If your mother brings you to the movie theater, Downton Abbey, The New Era.
Well, maybe there's a demographic they're seeking.
Yes, there is. There are other demographics that are being sought in other films. The first movie is called Good Morning. Good Morning is the name of the movie.
Yeah, but a different spelling for morning, Steve.
Oh, yeah. When I go to a funeral and I go, Good Morning, I get kicked out.
Steve, that seems like a Wedding Crashers follow-up. All right, Steve, Good Morning is a comedy. It's
written and directed by Machine Gun Kelly.
There's a lot of cameos in this, and it should be pretty fun, but certainly Netflix would have been probably the place to release this. But it's a limited release. If you can look on your theaters and see if it's out there. Steve, that's not the only film that's coming out this week.
Speaking of out there, there's a movie called Emergency. This is a story of three college students weighing the pros and cons of calling the police when faced with a unexpected situation. And
well, Steve, there's a big party coming up, and if we call 911, I mean, it could ruin our night.
But dragging a person around town instead of calling 911 might not be the best choice for your night either.
Something tells me they watched Weekend at Bernie's, Steve.
Yeah, I have very little hope for this movie coming out and saying maybe we should have just called 911 at the beginning.
This seems like a type of story that you get in the paper, like some young people making some really bad decisions.
Correct.
But hey, why not? Steve, there is a certain demographic that's named after this next film.
The next movie is called Men, Chip. Oh. So maybe this is one that you would like. This is a folk horror movie directed by Alex Garland, who we know from Ex Machina and Annihilation. Two very weird, very small films. I expect nothing less from Men.
So the premise of this is a young lady goes on vacation by herself to, you know, the British countryside, to a big, scary castle. Mm. And at that point, doesn't leave, Steve. Mm. It's horror. So I prefer well, maybe the follow-up could be female. So maybe I could enjoy that more.
The next one is called Machination. This is a very small budget film about a pandemic and anxiety. A young lady who really is suffering and really struggling to cope with isolation in a pandemic.
Looks like she washes her hands a lot, Steve.
I don't know how they came up with the idea for this movie, Chip.
I don't know. It's a limited release, Steve. And if you want to go through the pandemic, say in about 2 hours, and, you know, wash yourself afterwards, this would be the type of film to go see.
Yep. The new series version of The Time Traveler's Wife is hitting HBO. Technically, it hit HBO on Sunday for episode one, but there are 5 more episodes coming out in subsequent weeks. We talked to the author, Audrey Niffenegger, about this back in November of 2020. It's amazing to think that it was that long ago that we talked to Audrey about this. Is a Stephen Moffat produced show. I have high expectations for what this version of the story will be.
I do too. And for those who are not familiar with The Time Traveler's Wife, it is a love story where a person basically pops in and out of time and at that point meets his wife.
Mm-hmm. And at the same time leaves his wife, and she has no power over when he's arriving or leaving, and the feelings that she has of abandonment are on display.
Love, true love, Steve. That's not the only thing on HBO this week.
7 Naughty Words. That's what's coming to HBO this week. George Carlin's American Dream, the documentary directed by Judd Apatow, all about George Carlin, one of America's greatest comedians.
Certainly a fantastic subject for a documentary. One of my favorite parts of the trailer is where one of the comedians says, "We showed up at the George Carlin show to watch a washed up comedian give his show." And then they were blown away. Basically, Carlin reinvented himself, basically wrote a new script every year to perform. So that is pretty amazing at that. I look forward to watching this. Steve, Disney Plus is going to save you this week. How are they going to save you?
Are they going to save me, or are they going to drive me crazy? There is a new live action feature film from animation hitting Disney Plus this week. This is Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers.
Well, you know, Steve, I do a lot of dancing and I have a pass. So, I mean, is this about that?
Yes, this is John Mulaney and Andy Samberg. I still, my first reaction to this trailer when it came out months ago is, how did Disney give the reins of any of their intellectual property to Andy Samberg and John Mulaney? You have to click on this trailer. It is a mind-numbing idea of what these particular chipmunks could do.
I'm looking at it and I see a lot of Who Framed Roger Rabbit in this, and a lot of the breaking the fourth wall, having fun with the Disney characters and sort of a cartoon universe.
And a lot of fart jokes, a lot of inappropriate humor.
So it's a live action film. mm-hmm. with cartoon people. So, like I said, Who Framed Roger Rabbit type thing. Mm-hmm. We'll see if it's good. Mulaney and Sandberg certainly are capable of producing funny things. We'll see if it happens.
Book it. Brings us to our book. At our book of the week, you have been reading more about the history of comics. You brought us this week Old Gods and New, A Companion to Jack Kirby's Fourth World by John Morrow.
And John Morrow owns a Raleigh, North Carolina publishing company called Tomorrow.
I get it. Because he works on it with his brother, who's also a Morrow.
Exactly. This is the 80th issue of the Jack Kirby Collector magazine. It is a book. It is huge, Steve. Here, I'll point it up to you. There you go. For all of our listeners watching this, it is massive. And it's a bunch of interviews and a lot of commentary on Jack Kirby's Fourth World. And Jack Kirby's Fourth World, for those who are not familiar, Jack Kirby was one of the designers and creators of the Marvel Universe. And one of the characters he enjoyed working on most was Thor, the God of Thunder. And if we know anything about our Norse mythology, at the end of the Old Gods, we have Ragnarok. And Ragnarok is where the battle happens and the old gods die. So what happens when the new gods arrive? And ultimately, I think this is a celebration of Jack Kirby's love of mythology and his idea of taking what he learned from mythologies around the world and creating what he felt was a new mythology. This was his mythology based on a lot of the old thoughts. So we've talked about it before, but there's two worlds that were created and the world of the new gods. There's a heaven, there is a hell. Darkseid runs the hell world. Highfather runs the heaven world. They battle. In the battle, they've come to a time where there is a truce, where the two leaders, Highfather and Darkseid, trade their firstborn sons. And so we get a little bit of nature or nurture here. And that is part of the truce. So Orion, who is Darkseid's son, goes to live with Highfather, and he is treated well, he is loved, and he is basically our hero of the series of the new gods. And then we have Mr. Miracle, who is traded to Darkseid, and Scott Free is Mr. Miracle. Scott is abandoned after that, and tortured, and goes through hell. And eventually escapes anyway, which gives you the name Scott Free, interestingly enough. Well, anyway, this is a whole series of articles about what that meant, sort of the timing of it, how exciting it was, how it was never completed. And, you know, Jack Kirby, the more I read about this, I'm fascinated about it because it's something from the past. And it was something I was not interested into as a kid. It was way before my time when I was aware of things, but has influenced all the people that I read as a kid. Because if you're Walter Williamson, you love the new gods. And if you are Keith Giffen or any of the other creators that you could imagine, they were all influenced by this work. And it was sadly not recognized as at its time as being revolutionary, but over time it has basically become the DC universe. They keep drawing from it, keep trying to shoehorn it into Superman and Batman and stuff like that, where really it's sort of a standalone type of program. It also talks a little bit about some additional stuff. Jack Kirby eventually left comics, did a lot of designs for any number of projects, cartoons. Jack Kirby was commissioned to work on what became Argo, that if you remember the Ben Affleck film, or the book that was based on getting the people out of Iran during 79. and they were doing the pitch for a theme park, and Kirby's work was used for it. If you've watched any of the MCU movies, you have seen Jack Kirby's influence on things. And this was the pinnacle of his work. Ultimately, it's not, this book is satisfying in the sense of you get a bigger idea of how it influenced modern comics, what the stories were trying to say, and then sort of some of the works that continued his work. Ultimately, the story of Jack Kirby is not as satisfying as we would like it to be. It's a great concept. It would be very interesting if a skilled writer, and that's what, think about how things keep being redefined in the comic industry. But if there was a skilled writer to come in and take these concepts and really tighten them up, I think you've got something that would be super interesting. But, this is a type of book where you're kind of reliving your youth a little bit. You kind of want to escape a little bit. And John Morrow and his other writers have just done a wonderful job at recognizing this creator and also this story.
And is it good to hear some of the words that Jack Kirby had about his own work in this book?
Of course. I mean, Jack, there's interviews in here with Jack where he talks a little bit about it. But he was an idea man. His idea was typically, I'm going to design this, I'm going to create it, and I'm going to unleash it to other creators, and they'll work from this. What he ultimately wanted to do was be an editor over 5 or 6 books where they told this massive story and that it would eventually come to an ending. Steve, I think I've mentioned that Star Wars may have had a huge influence from this story, mm-hmm. because at the end, Orion, the son of Darkseid, is to battle with his father. And the source, not the force, and there's an equation and all these other things that keep going on. I do think that there is just a lot to glean from this, a lot to glean from a person who was at the peak of their creativity. And, he was just unfortunately put in an industry that, the goal is to sell books.
Mm-hmm.
And his books sold fine, but they were not the bestsellers of the moment. And he just was unfortunately cut short.
It's amazing how the writing of the 21st century has changed because of the publishing change. I wonder what a Jack Kirby today is putting out there to the world. And we are maybe not seeing that great creativity, but maybe we'll all discover some of those great things that people have written.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what the new thing. I mean, think about Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
And compare Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling's book, to Star Wars, which I think is a fair comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Harry Potter is much more sophisticated. It's much better written. Mm-hmm. And the story has a better, tighter arc. When you look at Star Wars, it is a story that has great parts to it. But then again, you're dealing with a whole bunch of other stuff. It just should have been thought out better and tightened up, or mm-hmm. any number of things. And especially the Disney 3 films, there's just, it doesn't even fit in, really. Right. So we're Jack Kirby stuff was a monthly book that has big ideas and certainly much grander. It was the idea of the graphic novel came from this. He had the idea that eventually you just put it all together and you could read it all at once.
Hmm.
But you have to understand, he wrote for children. This was not something that was meant for adult consumption. Good guys are good guys. Bad guys are bad guys. And there are, it's written as a mythology. So there is this wonkiness to it. And then when he continues those stories with different publishers and stuff like that, using, you could read it all in one universe if you wanted to, the Jack Kirby universe. But I don't know if they'll ever go anywhere. I think that the MCU is probably as strong as an opportunity to take advantage of this. When DC tried to bring out their movies, they tried to integrate the fourth world into their stories. They became incredibly dark, and just it's just not working. So I don't know what will ultimately come from it, but it certainly is a celebration and certainly worthy of your time if this has some interest to you. This is a big, big book, certainly enjoyable.
Here you go. That's The Old Gods and New, a companion to Jack Kirby's Fourth World by John Morrow.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. Anything happening in the scientific field this week, Chip?
Things are going out of this world, Steve.
And Mark Watney is celebrating because scientists have been able to grow plants in soil taken from the moon for the first time here on Earth.
From the moon, Steve, from the moon down to the University of Florida. They have grown. They basically had enough soil to, I guess, work and try to plant. If you can imagine what it takes to grow grass or to grow any type of plants. Mm-hmm. You know, think about how long it takes to build soil, to put the organic situation into the soil to grow. What do you do on a basically soil is dead? There's nothing in it.
Mm-hmm.
And they have the first chance, Steve. They're growing plants in moon soil.
So this is the first step toward colonization of the moon, or at least it's the next step, because the first step certainly was a big step for mankind.
There you go. It certainly is a leap forward, Steve.
I look forward to more science about the moon. We really don't study the moon enough on this show. We should talk more about mooning. Google I.O. has a couple of moon shots, and they showed us their new stuff this week at Google I.O. I think one of the big things is the Monk skin tone scale. They have adopted a new 10-shade skin tone scale for search in Google.
Well, you know, usually when you go to the beach, you start off white, and then you turn burnt, Steve. Maybe it'll show it there.
Is that two of the shades? The burnt skin.
You must have a suntan. The one of them is George Hamilton. I don't know. I think that was the...
Well, that's a classic joke. George Hamilton jokes haven't been used in a long time, sir.
Well, George Hamilton was an actor. George Hamilton had the ultimate skin tan. I mean, he was like a bright shade of orange, Steve.
And the best George Hamilton joke is when he played a vampire. Classic.
Pasty white, Steve. Pasty white with a skin tan.
Google I.O. Showed us a teaser for the Pixel Watch that will be coming out for fourth quarter of 2022. They have new Pixel earbuds that are promising, and they sort of showed us a Pixel tablet, which basically all they said was, yeah, we're working on a tablet.
Steve, it looks like they're matching, you know, Apple tit for tat.
Yes, Apple comes out with a watch and Google goes, oh, we can make a watch. So hopefully this will be the best smartwatch Google has produced. There's some future looking. The last minute of Google I.O. was really intriguing, talking about the future of augmented reality and the offerings that Google might be able to give us in the future. There is a spine-tingling piece at the end where they show off their new glasses that can do translation for you. We are moving toward a world of the universal translator. Back to Star Trek for a second. We're going to live in a world where somebody can say something to you and you can understand them in your language. And the idea of how we can communicate with each other is fascinating to me.
Something tells me there's going to be some unique translations, Steve.
there are still problems with translation. You're right. There are still some things that don't work. When we go word for word translation, it does not work. My French teaching wife will tell you, don't use Google Translate to do your French homework because it's not quite there. But there's so many great, smart people who have been working on this for so long. I have high hope for the future of translation.
Well, augmented reality seems to be our future, Steve.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I completely agree. I think it's much more our future than virtual reality. I don't see a future for virtual reality. I do see a future, however, for Doctor Who. Because yes, that's right. The new Doctor was announced on May the 8th. His name is Shuti Gatwa, and he was hired back in February, and he's been keeping it a secret since then. He is going to be the new Doctor. What we need to wait another year and a half to see is whether or not he will be the 14th Doctor, or if the rumors about the return of David Tennant persist, because there's a lot of rumors out there that David Tennant is going to play the 14th Doctor, and then we will get a 15th Doctor from Shuti Gatwa. I have high hopes for the new series of Doctor Who and the new production company from Russell T. Davies and Sony Pictures.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, anyway, why would they bring back Tennant?
To make money? Because Tennant was a very popular doctor, and these rumors are flying frequently.
All right, no worries.
We'll see what happens. The other side of that argument is, wouldn't that totally derail another doctor if they said, oh, we're going to bring this guy back instead of going forward, going backward? Wouldn't that totally derail new stars of the show? We'll see what happens. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
Yeah, next week will be a new era for sure. School ends next Monday for me, so next Tuesday I will be on summer vacation, and we will have an even more powerful episode of Too Much Scrolling. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and YouTube, and you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm shirtless Chip Hasenplum.
See you in the future, so you Chippendale dancers. What I want to thank you for, what I want to